You're listening to Idaho Matters.
But this is not Gemma Gaudette.
Gotcha.
It's Joel Wayne.
And LD from the podcast You Know the Place.
We're producing season 6 right now. Woo-hoo. And we need your suggestions. Places to visit that you maybe pass by all the time, but you've never stopped into.
Places that you want to know what's their business?
What do they sell? Who goes in there? How do they stay in business? All those questions.
All valid. What are you seeing out there? Where are we going?
Send us your suggestions. You can send them on Instagram at You Know the Place.
Or shoot us an email. Send it to youknowtheplacepodcast@gmail.com.
We want to know.
Okay, now here's Gemma.
From the studios at Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. Over the years, the River Street neighborhood in Boise has seen many changes. For the better part of a century, it was the most ethnically and culturally diverse area in Boise. It was home to immigrants from all around the world. And later, due to housing segregation, it was home to many of our city's African-American residents. Now, despite the changes that this neighborhood has seen as families move away and houses are sold and rebuilt, there is one home which has remained. It is the Irma Hayman House. Back in 2018, the city of Boise set out to preserve this piece of rarely discussed history. They were planning to transform it into a cultural site for education, art, and community. So joining us today to tell us more about the history and the future of the Irma Hayman House, our interim cultural sites program manager for the Boise City Department of Arts and History, Kristen Hill, and History Program Manager Travis Jeffries. I want to welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Tell us a little bit about Irma Hayman.
I'd be happy to. So Mrs. Hayman's full name was Irma Andre Madry Hayman. She was a Black woman, a lifelong Idahoan, a community advocate, and a longtime resident of Boise's River Street neighborhood. She was born in 1907 in Nampa, Idaho, as you mentioned, Gemma, to parents Amanda Chuteau Dodge and Charles Edward Andre. She was the 12th of 13 children, so a big family. It was a family of music lovers, and she loved music herself, and she played piano in the family orchestra. From Nampa, she moved to Boise in 1927, married a man by the name of Navy Madry the following year. Unfortunately, she was widowed in 1935 and eventually remarried to a man by the name of Lawrence Hayman in 1943. Now, this is where racial discrimination started to afflict the Hayman family. So preventing them from buying property elsewhere in the city, they settled at 617 Ash Street in 1948. Real quickly, Mrs. Hayman was a very hard worker. She worked at Lerner's, which was a women's clothing shop on Idaho Street. She worked 20 years there as a seamstress. She also worked for a time at the local airbase Gowan Field as a riveter. And by all accounts, she was a very caring individual. She was a neighborhood advocate, as I mentioned. She served on the River Street Neighborhood Council and acted as its chairwoman from 1973 to 1974. And then one of the most remarkable things about her life is just the longevity that she enjoyed. Passed away in 2009 at the age of 102. Still a resident of her neighborhood and had been for more than 6 decades at that point.
And you know what I think is interesting, Kristen, is that so many people aren't aware of Irma Hayman or her house. And I have to say, I mean, I lived here for a very long time before I knew of Irma, and the fact that I probably passed by her home numerous times a week, but never even knew the history behind it. It's kind of a little white house, as Travis said, on Ash Street. But her home is a significant part of not just the history of Boise, Kristen, but of African-American history. Why do you think, though, that so few people recognize her name or even would even know that the home exists, even though many of us pass by it very, very regularly?
Well, I think... The point about the house and not really knowing that it exists, it's actually kind of a point of pride in some of the cultural sites programs that we're able to preserve and share spaces that are examples of sort of vernacular architecture, but also just sort of a way of living that was much more standard to the average person. And so I think that this house is really... it's a really great example of that. As to the other question, you know, really the Black experience was not part of mainstream Boise history. There's been a lot of focus put on developers, politicians, and, you know, military officers, or, you know, people like that. But Boise was just a lot more diverse than people realize. And it's a goal of ours to be able to highlight stories of those who have been historically less visible. And so we're very excited to be able to bring a little bit more attention to the Irma Haymon House and to Mrs. Haymon through this project.
Mm-hmm. And Travis, and you know, when you think of her life, I mean, 102 years, an Idaho resident her entire life, there is such significance in I think a life that has that historical perspective, right? But then you add in the fact, as Kristen said, I mean, African American, she lived in a redlined neighborhood, and a lot of times we don't tell those stories, you know, in school. We don't learn about these individuals. So from your perspective, why is it important that not only do we share the history of Mrs. Haymon, but that, you know, we have conversations around the history of Boise when it comes to marginalized individuals?
Yeah, I think that's such a great perspective to have, to employ, and what a wonderful question. So I think that, you know, Boise in many ways is still subject to kind of the grand narrative of the West, right? And when we think of the grand narrative of the West, we think of these big structures, right? These big events such as the Civil War coming to the West, the railroad coming to the West, right? Development coming to the West, the construction of dams and highways and things of that nature. But what's not celebrated, right? And Kristen mentioned, you know, the military officials and politicians, what's not very often celebrated or even mentioned is the average individual, right? The everyday workers, right? Who labored to make the city what it was, right? We tend to focus on the leaders of the mining corporations or the developers of the real estate rather than, you know, the people who occupied, who rented, right? Who were tenants. And River Street, because of that redlined history, right, because of the housing discrimination that forced certain minoritized groups into these specific enclaves like the River Street neighborhood, we don't have a lot of access to their records. And we know that they were very transient, right? And that's just a product of the kind of structures, the historical forces that were at play that we alluded to, such as redlining and such as urban renewal, right? Because when things like urban renewal come through, you know, these sort of large scale redevelopment projects, they tend to target the quote unquote blighted areas, right? Those areas that are lower on the socioeconomic scale. And so it's really important to preserve an element of that history, right? That diverse history, that working class history, because that's not celebrated, right? But that's really sort of more apropos of most people's experience, I think, right? Rather than the real estate tycoons or the railroad magnates. So I think it's more realistic and I think it's more human. And I think that, you know, the work that Kristen's doing and the Boise City Department of Arts and History is sort of trying to write that master narrative, right? And sort of correct for that by inserting some humanity and some of the everyday life of ordinary people, right?
Well, and you're so right, Travis, because, I mean, yes, of course, it's good to know about, you know, the tycoons that came to town and they, or the, you know, the people who with, you know, they were able to build a fortune and they, you know, they, you know, help create what Boise is and, you know, what other cities across the country are. But with that said, without the average everyday person and frankly, without our marginalized communities, who were the ones that did so much of the labor, our cities wouldn't be what they are today.
Yeah, you couldn't be more right on that note, Gemma. I think that's so important, right, is that a lot of times the success of the people who are most visible in history or the accolades that are bestowed upon them by history, right, are really kind of a product of that underclass, quote unquote, right? Mm-hmm. The labor that was performed. And then sometimes, you know, the capital and the labor that was exploited or extracted from those communities. And it's easy, and history often forgets those things. But I think that it would do well to sort of remember that, right? And to sort of tease mm-hmm. out the everyday experience from those lives, from those communities. And I think there's so much potential through the Irma Haven House and through the programming and the history that this site represents to sort of celebrate the everyday, right? I think there's a lot of heroes in when we think of the everyday, the family person. And Irma, Mrs. Haven, I should say, was a family person. She was a community advocate. She didn't seek notoriety or fame for the things that she did. She was just helping out her community and trying to raise a family and working to make a living as everybody else was. And there's a lot of dignity in that. There's a lot of humanity in that, but that's not something that's typically celebrated. But maybe it should be.
Right. Absolutely. So Kristen, and Mrs. Haven's grandson, I believe inherited the home and then wanted to really, it sounds like, you know, preserve her history. And what was it like then when once CCDC got the home, Capital City Development, and then came to the city of Boise and said, we want you to preserve this? I mean, and I ask that because so many times it seems like when it comes to preservation, arts and history programs are trying to, you know, they're fighting to preserve the history. And here you were being reached out to saying, please preserve this history.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a great question. And one of the things that really comes into consideration here is that in order to preserve this history, there's so much that goes into making sure that the work of not only, you know, the physical preservation, but the preservation mm-hmm. of stories. And as Travis has mentioned, the dignity and humanity that has to be done very well. That has to be done right. And so when the city gained access to the house, which was in 2018 when mayor and council formally accepted it. In 2019, they developed the Arts and History Department developed the Irma Haven House Task Force, which mm-hmm. is a community group. It's really has been so important in our ability to do the work that we're doing. They are comprised of community members, Irma Haven's family, members of the Arts and History Commission, and the Arts and History Advisory Team. And it's a group that has provided recommendations for the programmatic vision and outreach tactics that surround the house, including guidance on, you know, the site's future use, the public art selection, and historical and cultural context and other community engagement strategies. So they have been absolutely integral in this process.
And so, Kristen, where are you in the process of preserving the home?
Well, physical preservation renovation on the house itself is complete. We are now working to get everything in place to support the programming and public access that we have planned. So, you know, furnishings and making sure that we just have everything both inside and out to be able to host community events and programs. And this will all be done and wrapped up in the next couple of months. We'll be opening the house in September. We have not cited a particular date yet, but we are working with the family to be able to determine a day that will work for everyone. So there will be more coming on that soon.
And so you're going to have things like art installations, right? I mean, Travis had mentioned that the Mrs. Haven loved music. I mean, she was in a choir with her family. She played piano. So, you know, bringing in kind of that aspect of her life as well within the home.
Yes, absolutely. We actually are in the process of two really exciting projects. So we have an installation and exhibition that's happening mostly in the interior of the house with a couple of elements outside that is being designed by local artist Stephanie Inman. And it's really great. There's a large scale mural that she has used to address the broader history of the land that the house is on. And it's beautiful. It's going to be such a great opportunity for people to learn a bit more about the space. We will also have a public art piece going up outside by a sculptor named Vinnie Bagwell. And it's going to be something that shows small aspects of Mrs. Heyman's life in a way that I think really honors her and her legacy.
And Kristen, for you, what is the importance of making sure that we preserve this history? Not just Mrs. Heyman's history, which is so incredibly important, but other pieces of history that sometimes, frankly, just get forgotten about. These stories don't get told.
You know, I think with the cultural sites program, we have been really focused on trying to make sure that what we're preserving is, as I've mentioned, a little bit more of the kind of vernacular. We're preserving something that is a common experience that people can identify with in a way that creates a feeling that it is a city for everyone, that it is a community space. We are telling stories of individuals and histories, but we're also providing spaces for our community to tell their own stories and really giving them a sense of ownership. And also, I think it's just very important for us to remember and highlight Boise's character. And these are the kinds of places that really tell a lot about that character.
You know, Travis, the Irma Heyman House is one of several landmarks that's getting the renovation treatment by the city of Boise. You know, and I think one of just learning more about the River Street neighborhood, learning about redlining for people who have not been exposed to that. But with that said, are there other culturally significant neighborhoods that you think deserve this same type of attention and deserve to be preserved so that we understand the history of our city and where we are today?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I mentioned earlier that Boise's history, it might not be well known, but we hope to change that narrative, that it is actually remarkably diverse, right, and continues to be to this day. There were several Chinatowns across Boise. There was a Latino population very prominent in the early economic development of Boise in terms of being packers and muleteers and laborers and merchants. And that is commemorated over on the other side of town in an area known as Spanish Village, right? And so currently we mentioned that the Capital City Development Corporation has been instrumental in the conveyance of this property to the Boise City Department of Arts and History, but they've been instrumental also in preserving some of the blocks on Grove Street, which were known to be incredibly diverse. So there are other initiatives going on throughout the city, and I think all that highlights that the tide is turning and that, you know, the narrative now really is a celebration of diversity, right? And that's something that we embrace at the Boise City Department of Arts and History. And that means recognizing all facets of our history, all components. And the history division really is devoted to preserving the history of Boise's community writ large. And that's everywhere. That can be found everywhere throughout the city limits. And we do that by encouraging, you know, education and outreach and by finding ways to incorporate history into future city projects. So, Gemma, if your listeners know of other heritage sites in the city with potential for preservation and cultural programming, historical programming, we would absolutely encourage them to reach out to us.
Yeah, and I just think it's so important to know the history, right, Travis? I mean, I was just having a conversation this morning with my 10-year-old, and we were listening to NPR, and we were listening to the local news, and something about Minidoka, came on the news, and he just finished fourth grade, and he said, "Mom," he goes, "I learned about Minidoka last year with Idaho History. Isn't it where Japanese people had to go to jail?" And I mean, you know, very elementary as a 10-year-old would talk about it. But the fact that he learned about that in school and that we had a broader conversation about it. I mean, I think that it's so important that we talk about the true history of what happened, not just in our state, but in our country, because I think it gives us just a broader understanding of who we are and where we are now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that, you know, one of the, it's interesting that you mentioned a conversation with your 10-year-old, because I'm, as a father myself, I'm going to have those conversations with my children soon as well, right? And maybe that, you know, sites like the Irma Hayman House as a historic and a cultural site that sort of honors, pays homage to the working class and to a multi-ethnic enclave here in Boise, maybe through educational programming, we can provide people with the fodder for those conversations, right? Because it really does start with the family, right? It has to start early. And, you know, we're dedicated here to inclusion and DEI, right? But not maybe... And there's an opportunity, a teaching moment here, right, where we can start those conversations earlier and provide some opportunities and a space for folks to engage in those conversations, because I couldn't agree more. They're so important, right? It's so vital to tell history as it happened and to not shy away from the wrongs that have been committed, right, or to gloss over them. Because if you do that, then we never reconcile with that. And then we never actually pave a way forward that works for everyone, right? So I think that... reconciliation and inclusivity all starts with history and acknowledging its true scope and meaning.
Yeah, absolutely. So before I let you go, so once again, Kristen, not a set date for when the house will be open to the public, but it will be this fall.
Yes, it will be in September, and we will have that date soon. So definitely that information will be available on our artsandhistory.org website. So keep checking.
Well, I really appreciate the two of you talking with us. I could talk about history all day long. I love it. I love learning about it. So thanks for letting me geek out a little bit. I appreciate it.
Anytime, Gemma.
It's been great. Thank you.
Well, thank you both so much. We've been talking with Interim Cultural Sites Program Manager Kristen Hill with the City of Boise and History Program Manager Travis Jeffers with the City of Boise, talking about a really important piece of Idaho history, the Irma Hayman House. And as Kristen mentioned, it will be open in September to the public. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.